Yay, welcome to another episode of the I Am Jen Wilson, the Healing Rebel podcast. And I have a guest with me today. Haven't had a guest for a wee while, which has been nice for you to hear my dulcet tones in your ears. But now we have Susan Perry, my good friend, my new good friend. We have multiple connections. Susan is a speaker coach, and first time I met Susan, she had come to me for a menopause massage. And when you meet somebody, you just go, oh, I loved her. And then I was like, I wonder if I'll ever meet her again. And then we went to a networking thing, and there you
That's right. That's
were.
right. I know. That was so lovely. Oh no, it's great. You definitely are a new friend. And this is apparently Galentine's Day, which is for Valentine's, which I subscribe to neither. But yeah, you're one of my new gals.
Girlfriends.
Well, let's not do that.
It's not. Okay, so why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? Tell them all the wonderful things that you do.
Amazing. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me on because actually, this is my first podcast. So I'm loving stepping out of my comfort zone and doing all of this. So, yeah, I am a speaker coach. What on earth is that? I don't teach you how to pronounce words, it's not an elocution lesson. It's really about how can public speaking boost your career. How can you get better at it? What things can really power up those presentations and things like podcasts? And there's a million different techniques and tools that will take you from that either, yeah, I'm not bad at it. I know it's a necessary evil, but I can teach you techniques like storytelling that really get that emotive feeling. And actually get your results for your business, funnily enough. So that's what I do. And I take you wherever you are on that journey, but I'm very focused on outcomes. What are the results that you could achieve that you didn't think were possible? And where are you closing yourself off from those type of speaking opportunities? So I'll talk a bit about that today.
So interesting. I've been along to one of your storytelling workshops, and we did the lunch and learn a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, about the nervous system and how it comes into play when you're talking. And I definitely need to work with you more on my storytelling, because I said to you at that workshop, I was like, I'm a bullet point person. I'm like, here's some facts. Question and give you some information, and it's not it definitely needs shaped and improved.
Well, listen, but can I just say, hats off. This was an emotional, not only for you, but for the rest of the group, because even though you had shared your story so many times with your clients, you've done it online. That's how your clients resonate with you because of how you explain it and your own journey. But it even surprised you, which was incredible as a coach to see because you're like, I've never done it this way. So it was honestly, it was a total privilege to see that and everybody else as well.
So can we talk a little bit about the nerve? Like, so obviously my podcast is the Healing Rebel, and it's about that healing journey, and your business is about helping people in their careers and in their business. But there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of nerves can come into people, whether they have to stand up and do a presentation or go for an interview or even have conversations with like medical professionals. And communication with people. Can you talk a bit about how the nervous system comes into play and what things, maybe some things that we can do to help?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was preparing for this, I thought to myself, right, where was I? So I'm not a scientist. I don't come from a scientific background, but what I have done is a lot of research on fear and self-esteem and confidence. So I kind of use that as the basis for today to say, so where does the confidence to come to speak up? What happens in the body, what happens in the brain as you move forward to kind of say, these are things that I'm either avoiding or I'm stepping into, and how do I feel? And I started thinking about my own level of confidence over the years. And I remember many, many years ago, like 25 years ago, that I worked for a recruitment agency. And I remember feeling that amongst my group of friends and my group of peers, oh God, I was really confident because we all just had a laugh. We were doing what we were doing. I was doing a job that I didn't really want to do, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to give this a go. I was like 24, 25. And I had to go down to London and do training with a whole bunch of people. And something crept up on me that day that I wasn't even aware of. We had to go up and speak about a bit of the module that we'd already done, give a bit of feedback. You know, it's quite normal now for me to do that or encourage other people to do that. And physically, honestly, Jane, my head started doing this. As I that we're going to come to them, we're going to come to Susan. Da, da, da. So I knew there was that dreadful kind of firing line, and I knew they were coming to me. And I went, oh my God, oh my God. My neck went to jelly. Never had that before. Had it a wee bit after. But I kind of was, I'd literally holding on to my neck going, I felt sick. There was palpitations and the self-doubt, oh my goodness, was right there. And I thought, I can't do this. I can't do it. I went up. I probably made an absolute hash of it. It wasn't even anything particularly important. It was just, what have you learned from that? But I had never been in that scenario in school, in college. There was very minimal and you could get away with it. So the first thing that I thought of was, wow, look at what, if that's a feeling that goes through people, now, whether it's the shaky neck, whether it's shaky legs, it's usually shaky something. Imagine, it's not shaking Stevens, that's the only thing it's not. sorry, random reference. But I thought, oh my goodness, what did that look like? And I literally berated myself the whole time. I never asked anybody about it, and it just went away, and that was that. What was happening within my body was absolute fear of judgment. That's what it was. It was fear of judgment. Well, here's the because they were all English. I was the only Scottish girl there. So there was a wee bit of self-consciousness. And actually, my system was crying out. My cortisol, my stress was through the roof, which floods your system with, well, what are you going to do? And my body chose to shake in the neck department. It manifests itself in lots of different ways. But there was a massive lesson for me to go, if I look like that, I'm not going to be as credible. I'm not going to be as believable. But in actual fact, I was just scared. I was just scared, and nobody had prepared me for it. So fight or flight kicked in, and that's when all the physicality of the symptoms came from. And I didn't know. I hadn't developed anything like a growth mindset that would help me on that journey. And it was many, many years later that I discovered how to do that. So that was my journey into, oh, wow, I can help people do public speaking now. But I've come from a place where I was absolutely terrified. And even the very first time I had to tell a story as part of my role as a facilitator in a social enterprise, I was up in Aberdeen going, this feels really weird. Everyone's staring at me. And I was the one training other people. Me think how brave all these people are that say I want to get better at this, because that's exactly where I was, and I had the trust and the confidence and the coaching from other people that helped me go, okay, so what are you doing with your legs, what are you doing with your hands, what's going on in your brain? So the chemical thing for me is just as important, because your body will flood you with whatever to survive. It'll do the cortisol, but equally, if you're having a lovely time, it'll flood you with endorphins, it'll do that dopamine, you know, piece, and it'll be all lovely. But that's where I learned to get out my head and actually embody what I was trying to tell people that would really, really work. Yeah.
Yeah, your nervous system doesn't know that you're standing up in front of a room of people to speak. Your nervous system knows your heart rate started to elevate, your breathing started to get more shallow. You might be about to be eaten by a tiger.
Yeah. And that was the reality.
Yeah, that's where all that warm stuff comes from. And then, like you were saying, like you were shaking. Some people, like myself, get quick bowel movements, and you're like, I didn't know I had to go to the toilet so much. I'm really sweaty, like I can sweat through layers and layers of clothes, like unbelievable. I'm like wet wipes, change of clothes with me. But the more you practice standing up doing it, the more you feel comfortable. But then even so, I've been teaching classes since 2009. I put me in a room, tell me to teach Pilates, not a problem. Put me in a room, tell people to tell my story, and I start, there's people there. I can do it to a camera and talk to myself, ramble on, stories probably all over the place, but I can sit and talk to camera, no probs. They ask me to put it in front of a room of people, and I'm like, right, what do I need to do to help myself? So 2 weeks ago, I was talking at a holistic fair, and I got there and I was like, feet are dead sweaty, get the shoes off, stand in my bare feet, right, quite warm, make sure I've not got too many layers on, but for the cold shiver shakes that you start to get when you're in shock, make sure that there's a couple of layers there to protect you. Get into the room, just feel the energy of the room, take a few breaths. When people start to come in, start connecting with them so that you're not talking to a brand new audience. You've already started building a wee bit of rapport with people in the room. And I was like, this is all stuff Susan's taught me.
It's so true. And you know, the first thing, that the word anxiety comes up time and time again. I'm really anxious when I go up to speak, or it's the anxiety that stops me wanting to do anything. And actually, it's that avoidance and staying safe that keeps you where you are. It's that kind of that fixed mindset. And a lot of it, believe it or not, when you start to look into confidence. So there's everything from Amy Cuddy and her, you know, power pose, which doesn't really resonate with me. It might with some people, but there's a lot that comes down to self-esteem. If you are, regardless of how good you are at your job, how amazing a business owner you are, how much profit you earned last year, you're put into a state. It's a state that fluctuates over time. So your confidence will be, you react to external factors, don't you? So if you've had praise, that was an amazing workshop, Jen, you'll be like, oof, now that's lovely, thanks very much. And you'll be like, I'll give a testimonial while you're at it. But if you encounter a bit, you know, some of them are tricky, or somebody that maybe gives you unsolicited feedback, and you're like, oh, I didn't actually expect that or ask for that, or somebody that kind of, you know, goes into your boundaries where you maybe haven't been as clear, you might be like, wait a minute, and all you start doing is the doubt starts creeping in, and then you start questioning, wait a minute, was I not clear? What did I do wrong? You immediately assume, A, I'm amazing because I got praise, or B, I'm absolutely shocking. I'm not worth it. I'm just going to give it all up. And there's something about that state that is controllable. It's controllable with techniques. It's controllable with, you know, because it's not a fixed kind of attribute. Stress or confidence. You like the woolly mammoth, you react to your external environment. And the trick is saying, actually, wait a minute, if I can do a wee bit of thinking back on, when was I confident? What behaviours did I exhibit? Because behaviours and actions are the end result of your thoughts and beliefs, aren't they? That like, on that, this is the way I'm going to think, and I'm going to look down because I wrote it. And Gandhi was the first person to come up with, your beliefs become your thoughts become words, words become actions become habits become values, and values become destiny. Now, whether you believe in destiny or anything like that. I very much believe in, if you think it, you'll probably do something about it. You'll probably repeat that pattern and that will become a behaviour and a habit.
Yeah. And you could change the word destiny for outcome.
Outcome, absolutely.
A nice alternative.
Yeah, destiny is a bit like, oh, I'm going to manifest something, and yeah, you're like, no, you need to take action, and there will be outcomes as a result of that. But it's that level of confidence, and I think we need to watch when we talk about levels of confidence as well. It's like, oh, she or he or they are really confident. What does that say to you?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you make assumption after assumption after assumption about what confidence looks like, sounds like, shows up like, and that's the comparison monster, as I call it, that steps into play when people go, if you're asking me to speak in public, it looks like that and I can't do that.
Yeah, it's having that, like, quite often, and I know a few people that are like this, that are the loudest look at me person in the room, are actually the least confident because they are so desperately trying to prove themselves to other people, where there can be other people that are fairly quiet in the room, they know exactly what they're doing, and they actually are the ones that exude the confidence. So it's noticing where the bravado is kicking in. Is this just a show to try to hide the fact that you don't have a clue what you're talking about? And I'm sure we think of people that we know that you're just like,
listen, I was one of those people in my early career, and because I am quite, you know, I love chatting, I love getting into a conversation. And I remember working years and years ago, and there was a guy in our team and he was the only guy in our team, and he didn't ever say a word in a team meeting. For some reason, this really irked me. I was like, he's not contributing. I mean, I don't know who I was back then, but I just had this, you've got to say it as you see it. Absolutely not. And whenever he would say something, it was bang on point. It was totally reflected. He was listening. Now, was he particularly confident? I don't know. I never asked him. But he didn't feel the need. So he was, if you talk about self-assured or self-esteem or whatever you want to call it, I felt I needed to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was saying wasn't always salient. It wasn't always relevant. And he would come in and go, I was just thinking about that. What if we did blah? And everybody would go, oh, yeah, absolutely. And then I would be raging because I would be, my ego got in the way. And that's what you learn to kind of turn back and go, it's not about me. So whenever you're in a talking scenario, a speaking scenario, like you said, whether it's you and I chatting, whether it's, you know, going to a networking event and being the guest speaker, whatever it is, if you're doing a blooming TED talk, it's not even about you. And that has helped a lot of people take away that physicality, because they don't initially don't understand it. You go, what do you mean it's not about me? I'm the one that's going to have to give the talk. I'm the one that's on the platform, podium, stage, whatever it is. And they go, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about you. It's like the reverse of the McFly song. It's all about you. No, it's not about you, actually. It's completely the opposite. That's my second really random niche reference.
I love it.
Love it. That's what you get when you work with me. You get like totally random references. And if you're into that, come on board. But yeah, it's about the audience, but there's a shift when people step into, like, talking about the physicality of the nerves, all the shaking, all the stuttering, all of that stuff is because you want to do a good job, right? At the end of the day, you want to help people. You want to encourage people to listen and take time out and hear how you can change their thinking, hear how you can help them. That as business owners, that's our gift, to be able to give ourselves a platform to do that. But it's grounded in support and help and going and resonance.
Mm-hmm.
People believe that you are credible and you've come from a place where you've gone, look, I was there. I was there. Here's what I did. So I've helped loads of people like you and me to do this. And so that anxiety and everything the anxiety brings, there's something about reframing that and saying, do you know, it's have a think about, you don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm. Couple of things that are coming to mind. First one is our use of the word anxiety. I feel like in the last decade has become really normal in conversation. Everything's making you anxious. Everybody's making you anxious. Every situation is making you anxious. Mm-hmm. And in the olden days, is, oh, I'm feeling a bit nervous about this. Mm-hmm. And those nerves could be excitement. And now the language is slightly changed. Because to me, anxiety was something that was much bigger. Yeah. And it's almost like, well, there's that big word up here. Let's hug that in. And then people get really attached to that word. So people say, oh, my anxiety, it's not yours. It's something that you're experiencing. If you let go of that minus, and it's just, I'm experiencing a bit of nerves, I'm experiencing a bit of anxiety, to downgrade it in your head from being a big thing. Can we then change the language back a little bit to, oh, I'm feeling quite nervous about this? Can those nerves be excitement? Yeah, awesome.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And you're right, it's normalised now to go, well, I've got an anxiety disorder. Well, have you? How, you know, you might have gone to the doctors, you might have never been diagnosed, but just you're reading and you're taking in what everybody else is normalising. And you know, people who suffer from anxiety, I've been there myself. I was in a situational anxiety. I remember getting signed off years ago by the doctor, and it was situational anxiety because I was reacting to the situation I was in. I was like, have I now got anxiety? I didn't know. He didn't explain it to me. And I took myself out of that situation for my own well-being. And guess what? I was a lot happier. Mm. Oh, there's all sorts of labels that we put on ourselves as well. And if we are not careful, we create just these paradigms for ourselves that become beliefs and that are fixed. And you go, I can't do that. Have you ever tried? There might be I want to, but I can't. There might be, oh, I look at what they're doing and I want to do that for my business, but I just can't. Because you set up these rules in your head about what you can and can't do. Yeah. It's like those belief systems that are formed right from the start. You know, how you grew up, you know, who you were pals with at school, what your mum and dad did. All these different journeys become your rules.
Yeah.
You're either challenged by amazing leaders out there that go, are you sure that's what you meant to say? My dad used to always say to me, I think you've got the wrong word there, Susan. He loved words and he loved correcting you, more importantly. And he would always say, I'm just remembering that there, he goes, I think you've got the wrong word there. And invariably I had, because I tried to explain something in a way that was either too complicated. I'd just gone to college and I was going, oh, right. I'm just going to learn all these new words. And no, it's not the right word, actually. Stop it now.
That was good. You had that kind of guidance.
Uh-huh. I mean, he wouldn't always tell me what the right word was to use, but he would just kind of really enjoy going, you've got the wrong word there. But it's like, if you avoid a situation because you feel, as you say, the nerves for me are excitement. The nerves are, I hope I impact those people, or the message impacts those people in whatever audience that I'm in. And that, taking it away from it, you know, the McFly, it's not about me. It's all about the audience. I think for me, shifted all those physical symptoms to go, I'm in service of them. And it was a really subtle It feels really subtle, but it was massive.
Yeah.
It's not about me.
Yeah, I remember one of my mentors. I used to be an indoor cycling master trainer. So I used to go to fitness conventions and we would be teaching on stage to 50 people, multiple classes all day long. And I remember like feeling quite nervous. And my mentor at the time was like, "That Jen, remember this isn't about you. You are there for them." And for me, teaching a class, a physical activity, that's really easy for me to be able to go, yeah, this isn't about me. This isn't about what I can do. It's about how can I help them do the thing so that they are learning for themselves. But then when it came to talking in a room, it didn't feel, for me, there was a disconnect because I was doing the same thing, except I am, because I'm still teaching. I'm still there to share something so that they can maybe take it on board to help bring it into their whatever their life.
And then what came up for you that hadn't come up before on that day? You know, when you were telling your story and you were like, wait a minute, this it's like it's crept up on you to go, oh, but I normally tell the story and I don't physically feel like this.
And your workshop?
Yeah.
Yeah, what came up? I think because I was telling it as a story rather than as a fact. That there was a more of an emotional connection to that.
Yeah.
Which, it's only now that you're asking that question like that, what was the difference? Because I was saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But I wasn't just delivering facts.
And this fitness
peeling off a layer, look inside. Do not look inside, just listen to the words that I have to say. But it's when we do that, like talks about that and the gift of vulnerability. It's about when you expose your vulnerabilities, that's when other people connect to you. That's when other people go lean in and go, tell me more.
These storytelling, I just love, it's just like so magical to me, but it's magical with an outcome, like you were saying before. It's that the cortisol lowers, and this is the stress hormone that would just basically just go through the roof, you know, the fight or flight. That's what causes the breathing to change and the heart rate to change and the sweating and the palps and all of those things. But I remember, and if it's okay to share this, I remember you're saying, you had said at that point, what the hell was my leg doing? Because you got that the leg was kind of going and reacting with where I think you're like the brain signals to go, oh, wait a minute, this is different, this is new, do I feel safe, is there a mammoth coming? And your leg responded to that by going, I'm going to have a bit of a wobble here.
Through the talk itself, and it was only about 2 minutes or 3 minutes or something like that, it was really short that you got us to do, but it was when we were then talking about the feedback and my body was like aftershock tremors. I'm like, I just want to sit down on my mod.
And isn't that like, I think it was so interesting for the rest of the group to see and experience that as well, because A, you were brave enough to go up first, and then everybody else was going, oh no, I don't want to go up now, but look, she's gone up and look what's happened, you know. And you were like honest enough to say, I don't know what's good, but that's how you described it, the aftershock. Mm-hmm. And that's the adrenaline, totally. So the adrenaline gets you through it and goes, this is what I need to do, and you're in the moment and you settle into it.
Yeah.
It's like being in a car crash, and let's hope nobody, you know,
touch all the wood.
Exactly, touch all the wood. But I remember when I worked in HR years ago, I had to bizarrely go and get somebody's laptop and equipment from them. It wasn't a good situation, and off I went because I was, you know, really experienced, and she wouldn't give me it. And I was trying to reason with her, and she was hurt, and she was, you know, what, as I say, it wasn't a good situation. And she handed me the laptop bag, and there was a tiny, you know, laptop bags of old, tiny, tiny wee handle. And yeah. I sort of put it over my wrist like that. And it was actually really uncomfortable. I don't know why I did that, because I wanted to free my hand up. And then she grabbed at my at the laptop to pull it back. And I remember being, look, you know, speaking to her really calmly, look, this isn't the way you want this to go. And I really talked to her calmly. When I went in my car, I couldn't stop shaking.
Yeah.
Couldn't stop shaking, because it's like your body and your mind just goes, let's just get through this. You can do it. You can do it. And then when the danger's away, you just, it seeps out of every pore. Mm-hmm. And then I beat myself up for, why did I do that? Like, what could I have done differently? And da, 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 da. So the adrenaline serves you, and it also slaps you. Do you know? It serves and slaps.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting and important, and probably a conversation that we're allowed to now have as women, that our monthly cycle can change how you respond to things. At certain times of the month, you will be more confident, depending on how the hormones are rising and falling. In other months, you will be more nervous, more anxious, more susceptible to that, because that week before your bleed, your sensitivity to carbon dioxide drops by 25%, which shallows your breathing, and women are more prone to anxiety and panic attacks in that week before their periods.
Mm.
So you have to do a talk. If you can work out where you are in your cycle, you can be like, oh, actually, I'm ovulating that day. That's a confident week. I don't have to worry quite so much. Or if you look at it and go, oh, actually, that's that luteal phase, and there might be a chance, right? What other breathing techniques, what other nervous system regulation, what other calming things can you do in that time to support you? But this is like a conversation we're only allowed to now have as women, to say, actually, we need to be able to honour what we are going through. And if you're a woman who is perimenopausal, menopausal, that flow of that 28-day cycle isn't going to be the same. It's going to be more erratic. So giving yourself a little hug, a little pep talk, and then tools that both of us teach, you for speaking, me for movement, how do you bring them in to help calm and regulate your nervous system, to soothe you before you go in, and then in that aftershock.
Yes, absolutely. And I always say the importance of breathing before, during and after. It sounds the craziest thing you will ever say, but only focus on, it's like they focus on the prep and they focus on the doing, and they never ever talk about the afterwards. And it's so important that no matter what the situation, like I remember hosting an event, and oh, there was some tricky stuff going on, just, you know, there was some controversial things going on. And did it all work out the way, you know, did the leaders in that audience get what they needed from the people that were there? Bit in question. And I remember coming off and I just went into a wee side room, because the event, I had closed the event, and it was fantastic. It was a celebration of people in communities coming up with ideas and having the courage to stand up in front of leaders and say, there's a gap here, and I've got an idea that's going to fix it, that's going to change lives. I mean, that's significant. And the bravery involved in that. But because of this thing that had happened, I just went, right. And I literally did what I now call my flower and candle breathing. So it's as if you've got, that wasn't planted, by the way. That just always sits there and never gets lit. You think that's a really sleek prop? It's really not. And you literally, you breathe as if this is a bunch of flowers, and you get the lovely scent, and like just, like a real deep belly breath, you know, your belly goes right out. And a lot of people don't do that. There's a lot of breathing that happens up here, as you'll know, that shallow breathing. So a really big kind of extend that belly. And as you're breathing out, you breathe as if that's a lit candle and you don't want to blow it out. So it's so slow and so light. It's like just like literally. And it would be more effective if I'd lit it, but you get the point. It's a technique that literally slows everything down. And actually, I remembered a coach telling me, it was a breath coach, it's the exhale that actually, it's that breathing out of the carbon dioxide that allows you, and the holding it actually. So it's the breathing in, holding it. You've heard of like box breathing or square breathing. Hold it, and then slowly exhale, and then you repeat the cycle. But the breathing afterwards is it's vital. I can't express that enough.
Yeah, because I think one of the things when you're excited and nervous and you go to stand up, especially when you're talking, because when you're talking you can't really do the you can't do that breathing because you need the words to come out. So while you're talking, and it, like I know I do this, it's I need to get my words out quickly. I'm a very fast talker. It's not a need to, I'm a fast talker.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All these things to say blah 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 blah, and then 20 minutes have gone by and I'm like, oh, I need to breathe now.
It's like, how did that feel like this? And I've seen people like pass out because they're basically not breathing. And you and I have got a good friend called Kat who coined the phrase the big pause. Always credit Kat with that. And it's the biggest advantage for public speaking because it can be used for so many different things. So we talk about the power of the breath, and then when we get excited, we think, or the brain goes, well, I must operate, my volume must change. So if I have to, you know, talk about something that gives energy to the audience or energizes them, I've got to do all of that. Da, 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 da. But actually by pausing, you land the point, and I don't mean for hours on end because that would be obviously very, very odd, but a simple kind of like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, I can't even say the words, but gives you that, it's not awkward, it's not going to get into awkward territory, but it also helps land the point, and B, gives you a bit of a breather to go, what's next? Where am I? A wee scout about, you know, looking at faces. And silence is really, it's an amazing tool for managing all that physicality. It takes practice, don't get me wrong. If you were to try that in your next talk, you're likely to feel awkward. You're likely to go, and people also might be going, what? Like, what does that mean? And there was I can't remember if I told you this, but there was a woman who, when I was coaching TEDx speakers, there was this actress called Cordelia Ditton. She was called Dill for short. And she was this Shakespearean actress, right? Ex-Shakespearean actress. And she was phenomenal. I mean, what she did to command presence and you know, work the room, if you like, how to own the room, was honestly outstanding. And she made each of us stand for 30 seconds and just look at everybody else in the room. It was one of the most cringeworthy things I've ever done. She said, right, so that's the worst it's ever going to be, and this is in a safe environment. No one is ever going to stop, unless you're in a play, right? And that's just not my world, right? Or the people that I'm coaching. Yeah, I don't know. You never know. But it's that, it's the fear of silence, a lot of people tell me as well. Because if you stop talking, well, who takes over? No one. So that's the cringy bit for a lot of people going, I must speak fast, I must get it all in, I'll say thanks at the end, and off I go. When in actual fact, you might be losing the impact of some of those points. So the breathing, the stopping really helps that the body feel more in control. And guess what? When you feel in control, you feel more confident.
Yeah, yes.
So the cycle goes on. And if you feed that, the more you practice that, and it's not just like a once and done, you can't just go, oh, right, I've got it now, I've nailed my nerves. No, I still get nervous.
Yeah.
Because, like you're saying, you know, I want to do a good job I want them to get something out of it, whoever they are. I'm in service of them, and I want them to walk away with tools, techniques, tips. So that's where the nerves come. Is that clear? Am I landing that point? the opportunity to speak to people afterwards. It might just be like, well, you're there and then you're gone. So yeah, but the feeling of being in control boosts your self-esteem, which kind of flushes out the nerves, because you're like, I've got this.
Yeah.
Got this. So all of those hormones and reactions lessen, and you can really refine that and go, okay, what's coming up in the body? And you'll know this yourself. For me, sometimes it's my shoulders, because I've been like this, you know, and a lot of us hold the tension, you know, because we're sitting at laptops and all the rest of it. And if I think, how am I standing? How is my body reacting to? And I go, right. And so I just breathe into the areas that, and I try and loosen it up. I mean, it's years of probably sitting like that. So it tends to focus on there. But yeah, once you're in control, then the flow starts happening, and it is the most wonderful feeling. And that's the level of control is what I would love people to grasp, you know, yeah, when they're speaking, because that's where they feel, well, I've got no influence on this.
And the only way you can get control is to start to practice, to become competent. And once with competence, you get confidence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's I mentioned it before, the growth mindset. You know, there's this professor in America, Carol Dweck, and she coined the whole fixed and growth mindset, and also the power of yet. But I don't know how to do this, dot, 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 yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of forget that as adults, we're always learning. We think, aye, that's fine. I learned to walk. I learned to talk. Gone to school. I've learned to drive. Got my job. I've kind of done it. It's like my niece years ago, you know, was quite, you know, she's singing and dancing and all the rest of it. And my sister said, do you want to go to drama lessons? No, I know how to sing and dance. I mean, she was like really ballsy. And my sister's going, no, but it's fun. It's with other people, but I know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's fear there for her.
Yeah.
You know, I like doing it on my own, but I don't want other people. What if I'm not doing it the same way as other people? So that was a fascinating kind of conversation for my sister to kind of unpick.
Yeah.
But you can learn, you know, we learn every single day. And if you're not in that learning state, you are going to stay stuck, and you are going to feel exactly, because it's not about, if you're afraid of public speaking, it doesn't mean your whole life is a sham. It does not affect your ability. It's just a state that you find yourself in. And as you say, it is practice, 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 which, you know, might be frustrating for people to go, I just want a fix and I just want to do it. Sometimes you'll give a really good talk, and sometimes you'll be like that.
Yeah.
Done a bit more there. Uh-huh.
A bit better. What bit did I forget? But even like we were talking before we hit record about speaking in everyday life and the art of communication, and how speaking is, we're losing that through text message, through how we communicate with each other, because we're sending emojis instead of words. But then we're also sending it by text instead of the voice. So we're deconditioning, we're not practicing, because we're not actually saying anything. I'll just find it in an email rather than pick up the phone and have that conversation.
Yeah.
Like it's yeah, become a lost art that we then see how somebody said something on social media and somebody replies to it, and then somebody gets offended or upset because they haven't actually said or heard the words to hear the emotion, to hear the intent behind the words that are being said. And if you stand up, deliver whatever message it is, whether it's, can you go to the shops for me and buy me some potatoes, or just how you heal the world, or somewhere in between, you know, whatever your conversation is, when you can hear the words and you hear the emotion behind it, you see the person's body language, if you can visually see them, but even the different tones in people's voices, you get a better sense of where they're coming from, what their message actually is, rather than the written word. There are very skilled writers who can do that, of course.
Uh-huh.
But sending text messages, or for everyday communication, it's not
Yeah. And you know, the classic when we all started using mobile phones was somebody wouldn't take caps lock off and they were like just shouting at you. And you'd be like, calm down. I'm going to send you it. It's fine. I'll do it. But that's the thing when we're so quick, you're right, the intention is lost behind the words. And actually, there's a girl who I like, you know, I do like the wild swimming. And there's a girl there, what age is she? Just over 30, I think. And I remember once she sent a text in the group that was ANO. And that was her saying, I know. I know. ANO. And I was kind of, I said to my sister, what's that? ANO? I just kept going, ANO.
You
Saying, I know. I think she's saying, I know. But this is the shorthand now that's been used, and I'm like, makes me sound like a right old fuddy-duddy. But grammar is, oh, I don't know, so important to me. It's so beautiful. Look at that language that's been created and what people have done with it, and words change lives. Do you know, whether it's poetry, whether it's, you know, the book that you read. And I know you're an avid reader, but imagine the state that puts you in. You can imagine yourself there. You can, you know, and even with the book that I'm still listening to, the audiobook of the one that I gave you, The Young Team. And I said to you, I couldn't read it because it was done in really like broad Scots, if you like. It was just done in total local slang. I found it really hard to read. And he's narrating it, and I connected much more with the way that he would say it in his words. And we just words, honestly, words are they honestly do change. They change rooms, words, because you think of anyone that's given a significant speech or talk, it always comes back to, wow, I didn't know, you know, like, I have a dream, Martin Luther King. Wow. Does anyone ever remember what he said after that? Now you might have the headlines. You'll go, I have a dream. What was his dream again? Sorry. You know, and most people would know. But all these amazing actors that they're fantastic at their craft, but they crumble when they have to go and do an acceptance speech for amazing work that they've done. And people go, I can't tally you with the amazing person. So it's not your identity. And I know you've talked about that before. It's not your identity. It's a situation and a state that you find yourself in. And you can choose, what a brilliant way, you know, you can choose to use brilliant techniques that calm your system down, that get you prepped, that help you emphasize words, the way your words tell your story. And actually, you're the only one that can be you. That is physically impossible for anyone else to be you. And that can be overwhelming sometimes when you feel it's all on your shoulders. But well, quite a lot, I say to people, if you're telling your story, you're not going to forget it. And that fear of, oh, what will I say next? What will I forget? You'll be like, well, if it's my story and my scenario and my business. Yeah, I didn't say that before this, and I was supposed to do that, and da da da. You do it your way. Be authentic. It's you.
And was it Maya Angelou that said people don't remember what you said, they remember you made them feel? So if you're taking on that journey, they'll be like, oh man, I remember listening to that person and wow, no idea what they talked about, but just I love their energy. I loved being in their presence. I want to be in their presence more, or they made me feel really calm, or the opposite of, oh, remember that person? They made me feel really on edge. I'm going to avoid that person.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
to have two people telling exactly the same story, but the energy behind it and the intention behind it can make you, the individual, feel completely different.
Yeah. And without getting too kind of woo-woo, it's all about those, it's the environment that you create and the sort of vibrations of your words, if that makes sense, because you can be a very, very, you know, like somebody like Tony Robbins, for example. Very full on, very that masculine energy. Now that works for a lot of people. It doesn't quite work for me. I prefer, it's too showy, it's too loud, it's too much. And you know, you kind of go, okay, I've got a choice then, and I choose not to really listen to any of his. I might read some of his stuff if it's useful, but that energy can be a total turn off. And you just decide. So the words that always comes up for me is resonance. So the confidence will come and everything will react, your body will respond and react if you're saying something that has resonance. And that's why it's not about you, it's about the audience. What do they need to hear from you? Or what does that one person need to hear from you? You know, and it sounds as if like you're having to think really, really deeply and really kind of carefully every time. No, you don't. But just think, what do they need to know? How can I help? How can I explain this in a way that's me and it's really authentic? So it's like taking, you know, these scary talks, it's like taking our conversation and putting it in a public domain. That's all it is. That's all. And you might think, oh, I'm so terrified. But hopefully, once you gain that control and once you practice, create some situations where you've put yourself out of your comfort zone. That's one of the hardest things. I was coaching a client recently and I said, how can you create more opportunities to speak about your business? And he was sort of, what do you mean, create opportunities? How can you manifest? How can you say to somebody, can I give a talk at your next meeting? Can I do that? And he's like, I never thought I could do that. I mean, you can do anything you like. They can only say no, or they can say not now, maybe later. And tell them, you know, so creating those opportunities is, it's scary, but my goodness, look at the results. You could get that collaboration that you always wanted to, you know, work with him, them, her. You could increase your customers. You could change even more people's lives by just simply using words. And that's, when you think about it like that, it's words, it's energy, it's vibrations, and it's there for good, not for evil.
And I think when you can get your head into that space, that then helps change your physiology, because you can't disconnect the body and mind. If your body's anxious, your thoughts start getting racing. If you can get the mind calm, then that's going to influence the body. And if you can get both of them calm at the same time, then there's a beautiful little dance there. And
Sweet spot.
it takes practice.
It really does. And it's funny when you're even like looking into, there's all this, you know, NLP and cognitive science, and I was going down some rabbit holes like between yesterday and today. And it doesn't need to be that complicated, as long as you understand, if I can control my physical, you know, it's the, as you say, the brain and the body working together. To go, I'm just saying words to some people. You know, there's very complicated structures out there. What is it you want people to feel? Remember how you felt when, you know, somebody inspired you by their talk. You know, what did you like about it? Don't try and be them. That's the worst thing you could ever do. Even there's some coaches out there that would say, if you see a trait in a speaker that you particularly like, try to emulate that. I would say no. I would say be yourself, for goodness sake. You know, you are the expert at being you. And just I would say enjoy it as well, because it's a fantastic, what a privilege to be in front of people telling them a story that your story and that resonates with them. It's a powerful thing.
I think that telling somebody to emulate somebody else is almost saying you're not good enough as you are, so pretend you're somebody else until you are better, rather than just be like, that's interesting, maybe be inspired by that. How do you bring that element out in you? Because if you've recognized it in somebody else, it's already in you, it already exists there. So what do you need to do to nourish that, to allow it to come out?
Bring
Me see
that, yeah.
again flashing.
Yeah. But it's like that act, you know, fake it till you make it again. I'm like not a, you know, I say practice, practice, practice. That's what I say. If that didn't work, record yourself doing it a different way. What about this? Get some feedback. Ask for specific feedback. Does that resonate with you? Well, I don't really know why you said that bit in the middle. Okay. What did that make you feel? So it's all of those good things. And for every minute that you're asked to speak, technically, you should be putting an hour in. Now, if it's a big, and I don't mean just like a, you know, it doesn't have to be a major talk. This is where people get caught up, I think, about where, what, I'm not going to do a big talk. Doesn't matter. Your big talk could be in front of four really important people to you. Do you know? It really doesn't matter. So get, you know, rid of any assumptions that a talk is in front of hundreds of people. That's a different gig, and very few people get to do that, surprisingly. Do you know? It's a very, it depends what your business is, and it depends who your audience is. Like, could I speak in front of, yes, I could, but my goodness, I would be nervous. My goodness, I'd be like prepping for like weeks and weeks and weeks beforehand, because I would want it to help those people. The nerves doesn't mean you don't do it, is the point. And closing off a lot of opportunities. But yeah, it's an amazing thing. But yeah, don't be yourself. Don't act as if, and don't do the comparison monster that invariably, you can admire somebody, for goodness sake. You can go, oh wow, like you say, you could be really inspired, but they're not you.
Be you, warts and all, stutter over your words. And I think, see, if you go up and deliver something beautifully, people will, oh, that's lovely, that's lovely. See, if you go up and you trip over a couple of words, people will feel much more connected to you. Absolutely. Because that's what they do as well. Like, there's some days you're just like, I can't actually string a sentence together.
When you talked about, you know, like perimenopausal, menopausal women, you know, women who still have, you know, cycles. And it's like, I don't know about anyone else, but the brain fog that comes with the menopause is, it can be debilitating. It really can. So, you know, do you remember at Glastonbury, Elton John, who, I don't know if he's 80 now, or he's approaching that rough age, and he was absolutely berated for having the words of his songs on a screen just down at the stage. And you're like, this is a guy who has, you know, I mean, there's, why not?
Yeah.
All the best speakers have notes. And actually, just because the camera was able to show it, every gig that you probably go to, they've got some kind of prompt somewhere.
Yeah.
That's wanting to do a good job. That is not, he's frail and over the hill. And all. So we need to challenge our assumptions about AIDS and prompts. And somebody said to me recently, I want to get rid of any prompt. And I said, why? Why? You know, you're a human being, you're not a robot. We've not moved into that territory yet. Nor, you know, people and emotions and evoking that emotion. I mean, why? I said, you can hold a prompt card. You can have something in the distance with some visuals on it. You can do whatever you like. So let's break the myth of what speaking is. And the fact is that people want you to do well. They want to hear what you've got to say. And you're not there as a, you know, you're not Bill Bailey, a comedian. Like, you're not there as a performer. You're there to help the audience think, hopefully, and take action as a result of what you're saying. And how you do that is authentically you. And the one thing I did read, actually, apparently, in terms of nerves and how that manifests itself, apparently Adele vomits before she goes on to every single performance.
Amazing.
Right? So,
it's not amazing for getting up, but.
Aye.
That's it. Yeah.
That, right? It's Adele's first night. Right? There we go. There's the bucket. It's, do you know, it's like just dispel the myth that everyone else is doing it better than you, because we're all human.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to say before we finish up?
I think probably just reflecting on all of this, I would ask people to just challenge their own beliefs. Where are they getting stuck? Is there an opportunity that they can step forward? And that's my invitation. Yeah. Where can you create some opportunities to create value for the people that you serve, that are your customers or that work in your organization, whoever these people are? Just don't fall into the sheep mode. Do it your way and have fun with it and just rock it. Doesn't matter. Who cares? That somebody said to me recently, you know, I have to do a presentation, so I was just thinking about my slides and I was like, whoa. Challenge those assumptions. I'm a no slide girl, as you probably know, or very minimum slides. Just challenge the assumptions. Somebody asks you to speak, grasp it, do it your way. Because nobody says you have to do this, this, and this. So just find your own way, try it, experiment it, and enjoy it, apart from anything else. Just keep being you.
Absolutely. Where can people find you online if somebody's like, I need a bit of Susan in my life?
Yes. Well, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on Instagram. So I'm Susan Perry, speaker coach. And you can find me on my site. So I'm basically Susan Perry, speaker coach. And yeah, I do all sorts. I work with individuals. I work with groups. I help everybody from leaders to established speakers who want to get even better. And it's all around my kind of cornerstone, if you like, is storytelling. Mm-hmm. And how stories can shift your results and shift the thinking in communities and organizations and for all sorts of people, for society. So if you want to do something where you're lobbying for parliament and you want to, you know, really get, you've got a social issue you want to look at, if you're sitting as a leader in a team and you're like, I'm not getting my messages across, how can I use my story? And for teams as well, business owners, there's real results. You can, the networking that can happen, as it, and the collaborations and the opportunities. So there's a million ways, but I'll take you from wherever you are and get you speaking in a really compelling and impactful way, but not just to get the results that you want. So I will always be asking, what is it you want to do with this information now that you're able to do it?
Yeah.
As speaking, it will enable you to do more in your business.
Amazing. And life.
And life, yes, absolutely.
And I think
look out for stories wherever you are, you'll see them, you'll hear them. Oh.
Yeah. I think since knowing you and Suzanne from Curious Wolf and doing a wee bit of like storytelling, when I'm reading now, like say when I'm reading fiction, I read it differently. Mm. I know people are telling stories and I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. Because before it was just words, one of each, and I was just reading. But the more I'm learning about it, I'm like, oh wow, right, how do I make things better?
No, but it's like a superpower that you can't switch off. It's like every interaction with, like, you know, you can be waiting for a train or a bus and something happens or somebody says something really funny or quirky or whatever, and you're like, that's going to be banked somewhere for a situation that is relevant where I can, you know. And sometimes you will have like really random things that come into your brain. My view is just say them. And that's how I get by, because that's my uniqueness. If I suppress that, I would be like, because I want to enjoy it. I want to enjoy every conversation. And not one, I keep saying the one thing, there's a million one things. For you, you know, that's the, you know, you aren't for everyone. You won't resonate with everyone. And that's where you'll find your clients, you'll find your people on whatever level that or frequency or vibe that you're operating on. If people like the cut of your jib, to you, as my gran used to say, they'll be like, well, aye, I can work with her. That's great. You're unique. And honestly, it's I just love it. I just love helping people figure out their story. It's fab.
And I love listening to you, and I love speaking to you. And it's so
So I know, I'm like, oh my god, have we massively gone over, and I have no idea what the time is.
We're this far. It's good, just over an hour. Well, I'll wrap up this podcast. Thank you so much for being here. And I'll put the links to where people can find you into the show notes so that it's dead easy for them to find you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This has been great. My first podcast.
Woo-hoo.